This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, welcome back. Crossover NBA podcast. Chris Mannix and Howard Beck here. Happy almost NBA finals week, Beck. I think we'll have our finals participants by the time we record this time next week.
I think we will. I think that seems very likely, maybe even certain. I'd have to look at the schedule. But we're getting there. You can kind of see it coming into focus too, right? Like it's... We are hours away from some of this being decided, but it's certainly looking like Bucks-Suns.
Yeah, looking that way. We'll get to that. Also want to get into the Damian Lillard stuff, which has captivated the basketball world for the last couple of days. Clippers, they're off-season. We'll look ahead to some big decisions they have to make there. Jazz and Mavericks, they've had some shakeups there in the coaching and front office area as well. Dive into all that and much more. But Howard, we do have a USA basketball team official. That was made official earlier on Monday. 12-man team. I'm pretty impressed by what Jerry Colangelo was able to put together. I thought this USA basketball team going to Tokyo might be something of a ragtag bunch. Might have actually resembled the 2019 World Championship team that stumbled so badly in that tournament. Good for Jerry Colangelo. Good for USA Basketball for putting a good team together.
They did a really nice job. There's a lot of firepower on this team. There's not a lot of what we would consider traditional size, but that's not where the game is, especially at the international level anyway. So if anybody starts saying, oh, they need this, they need that, or Anthony Davis isn't there, I'm not sure that's going to really matter. We can run down the roster real quick. I think people will probably immediately think about who's not there, right? No LeBron, no Steph, no Harden or Kyrie. No Jimmy Butler, no Anthony Davis, no Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, no Chris Paul, no Zion, no Trae Young. So there's a lot of star power that will not be going to Tokyo, but the U.S. clearly has a surplus. I don't think anybody's concerned that however you view this team, is it the second team? Is it the third team? It doesn't even really matter. These are all NBA-level talents, and I think there's great balance here. It's a good-looking roster.
Yeah, and there's been some fixation over the last couple of days about Kevin Love's place on that team. Jalen Rose kind of kicked it off by suggesting he was the token white guy on the roster. It's a little ridiculous since USA basketball teams are largely comprised primarily of black players, including the one in 2016. So it's not like they haven't sent a full team of black players to the Olympics. And look, I think Kevin Love has value on a team like this. For starters, he has equity with the program, which, as we both know, is big for Jerry Colangelo. He played on the 2010 team, and he was part of the gold medal winning 2012 team. That is relevant in this discussion. And when you're putting together an international team, a player with Kevin Love's skills is valuable. I mean, in 2012, Kevin averaged 12 points per game. He led the team back then with 8 rebounds. He shot 36% from three. His style of play fits international basketball. And people have, social media have like gone after Kevin Love and like made suggestions for who should be on the team. I've heard DeAndre Ayton. Okay, he's from the Bahamas, and he can't play on the team until he becomes an American citizen. Even then, like with Hakeem Olajuwon, it takes a FIBA waiver to get him onto the U.S. team. I've heard Karl Anthony Towns. Well, he played for the Dominican Republic. Like, he can't. When you do that, you are not eligible for Team USA. So, Twitter is stupid, once again, and I think we should all kind of lay off Kevin Love because I do think he has value for this team.
All right, that's fine. I'm not going to defend Twitter by any stretch. I will defend people who are at least raising an eyebrow over Kevin Love, not necessarily in racial terms, but just in general. Like, I get the equity built up with Team USA. I get the international experience. I get that the skill set and everything else. Kevin Love has been a non-entity in the NBA for the last couple of years, because primarily of injury. I'm not blaming him. I'm not saying this means Kevin Love is done, but there have been a couple times in the last couple of years I've wondered if Kevin Love was done. And so, I get it. With the wealth of talent that the U.S. has to put together a 12-man roster, Kevin Love, given the scarcity of his play over the last couple of years in the NBA, I understand if people are raising questions. The rest of these guys are all, you know, vary from locks, absolutely, no question, to, yep, I could totally see it. Like Jeremy Grant, you know, like a rising star, two-way player, versatile skill set, and he's long and he can guard a lot of positions. Like, no one's going to question Jeremy Grant being on there. And everybody else, like, they're almost no-brainers. You know, Devin Booker, Dame Lillard, Drew Holiday, Durant, obviously, you know. And that's an interesting wrinkle here, too, that, you know, Durant and Tatum and Lillard, like, those are your guys who are your, I think, your top-tier go-to scorers who, if you think about the Olympics as a chance to say, like, this is my version of, right, we had the LeBron teams. We had the one that Kobe was, like, the symbol of, the guy who was the pulse of certain Olympic teams. Carmelo has been huge. I think this is the first time that you could say, like, okay, this might be Kevin Durant's Olympics. Like, you hate to say it because it's Team USA. It's supposed to be all about everybody. This might be one where we remember this as the KD Olympic team.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons Kevin Durant is playing. It's a legacy building team for him to get another gold medal. I think he's going to pass LeBron for all-time scorer on this trip, or this, he's going to do something of significance scoring wise.
I will say this before we close the book on at least this discussion, or at least the Durant part of it. Mm. I'm not sure I'd be thrilled if I'm the Nets. I'm not sure I'd be
really
thrilled. You signed him to a 4-year max deal. Year one, you knew you were just spending the money just to have him rehabbing in Brooklyn. Year two, you know, he was the only healthy one at the end, but he certainly had his health concerns along the way and missed a lot of time. I'd be worried. You know, we shouldn't just pretend that the Achilles suddenly didn't happen, or that Achilles can be magically
healed. Why not? Steve Nash did. I mean, guy who's playing like 50 minutes at the end of a game. Like, what do you want?
That's the thing, though. So, like, I'm sure he'll be fine. I don't want to be alarmist. Kevin Durant going overseas and playing another month of ball between the exhibitions and the actual games. Every time he goes out there, I just feel like when you're coming back from an Achilles, and especially at his age, I'm holding my breath the whole time if I'm Sean Marks and Steve Nash.
That's, to me, that's a little overkill, because Kevin Durant's going to be playing basketball any of this summer. The guy's a junkie. It doesn't matter if he's over in Tokyo, or if he's playing in Baltimore or Miami or LA or wherever he goes in the offseason. I would much rather have him be under the supervision of a professional training staff than going out and doing whatever he's going to do on his own. Think about it, Howard. Like, there have been, like, in 2019, there were some injury issues that carried over. I think in Boston, was it Marcus Smart? Somebody, or one of the Celtics, it was dealing with some injury issues that came from USA Basketball. By and large, anyone that participates in USA Basketball is generally better for it. Like, they have a more, their NBA careers benefit from their USA Basketball experience. So I really have no issue with Kevin Durant going to Tokyo playing. By the way, he's not going to play more than 25 minutes a game, tops, you know, in for that team. They don't play back to back. So it's like, I think he's going to be just fine over there.
I mean, it's a great point. It is certainly a less onerous schedule. And you're playing with other elite players. It is a virtual all-star team when you're playing with the Olympics team. And so
practices are going to be the hard part.
They're
tougher one.
And he can go easy on those. So the burden is not as heavy. The workload is not as heavy. He's probably fine. I'm just saying. I mean, we should not just pretend that the Achilles never happened and that he doesn't have a lot of miles on him, and that the Nets are hoping that those last 2 years that are on his contract, at least at this point, are years that they're going deep into June winning championships. And however many miles he's got left, if you want to put it in those terms, you want all those miles spent in a Brooklyn Nets uniform if you're the Nets, I think.
That's fair. I'd like to point out that in two of the last three games, Kevin Durant played 49 minutes and 48 minutes.
Because okay, they're trying. So, Because they were trying to win a championship in the NBA. Okay. But your point is well taken. They weren't exactly exercising a lot of caution.
I think KD's going to be fine at 22 minutes per game for USA Basketball this summer.
All right, fair enough.
All right, let's move on. Let's start this discussion with Damian Lillard, which is the big story right now out of Portland. It's getting interesting out there, Howard.
Getting?
On Sunday, the Blazers made the hire of Chauncey Billups official. That came just hours after Yahoo Sports' Chris Haynes, who is close with Lillard, reported that the coaching search, the Blazers roster, as well as backlash from the fans about Lillard's role in the coaching search could push Lillard to ask for a trade. So, Howard, what do you make of the latest developments in the ongoing Damian Lillard saga?
So, fascinating on a bunch of levels, Chris, not least of which is this. The Blazers have been out for how many weeks now? And in the wake of their season ending, there was no sense that Damian Lillard was ready to start pushing for a trade or start agitating about the future or feeling the need to make a move now, you know, losing faith in the organization. Even in the wake of the Terry Stotts firing, the first thing we heard from Lillard was, I would love for Jason Kidd to be the coach. Not, I don't care who the coach is because I may not want to be here anyway. It wasn't that. So something's changed just in the last couple of weeks. And we can get into some of the things that have happened just in the last few days that maybe have changed the landscape a little bit, but it seems to me that, you know, that Lillard, if he was really concerned primarily with the Blazers' ability to surround him with the kind of talent to win championships, then whatever buttons he was going to push, whatever agitating behind the scenes he was going to do, and whatever would leak out about that could have been weeks ago. Not, I want Jason Kidd to come coach me. So the fact that he's doing this now, like, it feels like it's pretense. Like, citing the roster or anything else about the Blazers' ability to build around him feels like a pretense for something else. And I'm not sure what that is. Maybe it's just the backlash he's getting from Blazer fans about the perception that he had something to do with Chauncey Billups being hired, and we'll get into why that's controversial. But it feels like any discussion of Lillard is concerned about the Blazers as an organization and the ability to win championships feels like pretense, because he could have made those concerns known weeks ago when he was instead trying to pick his next coach.
Damian Lillard, to me, is like the guy trying to break up with the girlfriend for the first time. You know he wants to do it, but he just doesn't know how to do it. And I've had this feeling ever since the end of the season came in Portland. If you remember, Lillard, who has become an expert at cryptic Instagram posts, had one where he basically said, how many times do I have to keep doing this and not achieving? I'm going to butcher the line from the song that he posted up there, but he seemed to open the door for change after the season ended against Denver. And you know what? I don't blame him. If the Portland Trailblazers couldn't beat the zombified Denver Nuggets, who were without Jamal Murray, what makes anyone believe, or makes Damian Lillard believe, that they can beat a top-tier team in the Western Conference over the next couple of years? He's just handled this very ham-handedly. Like, I don't think we've seen the proper way to go about asking for a deal. That Damian Lillard would want out is completely understandable. He's in his early 30s right now. He's looking at this Blazers team, which is in something of a transition phase in hiring a new coach, and looking at the roster and saying, how over the next 3 years am I going to be able to be on a championship level, to put myself in position to win a championship? Because as we look at this Portland team right now, are they better than Utah? No. Are they better than Phoenix? No. Are they better than the Clippers or the Lakers? That's not even mentioning, Howard, some of the teams that are coming up behind him that are really good, those younger teams that are going to start making some noise as early as next season. I think Damian Lillard wants out, and I'm basing that almost entirely on kind of reading the signals that are being sent publicly by Damian Lillard.
Well, I mean, look, your analogy at the beginning, I hate to give it credit, but I'm going to use your own analogy to say that I think it's more subtle than what you're saying, because it is more like kind of conflicted feelings, right? Like, there's some part of the boyfriend who kind of likes the girl, doesn't want to necessarily break up. This is a hard decision. Damian Lillard loves Portland. I think that's genuine. Damian Lillard has been, openly, fervently loyal to that city, that fan base, that franchise. And I don't think that that's fake any more than I think it is with Bradley Beal in Washington. Now, there does come a point in an NBA star's career where they have to decide to be selfish and say, you know what? This organization isn't getting me where I need to go. And so I never begrudge a guy if he wants out. And if Dame Lillard decides he wants out, I wouldn't begrudge him for that either. But I do think that it's not so much as him hiding it in this scenario. I think it's more that there's he's conflicted. And if the Blazers came to him tomorrow, if Neil Olshey came to Dame Lillard tomorrow and said, listen, I know you got some concerns. I understand it. I have the same concerns. We need to get you the right supporting cast. But here's the plan. Here's what we're doing. And here's how I think Chauncey Billups fits into that. And here's what I think we can do with the roster. Like there is still a path forward up until the moment that Dame Lillard actually makes the trade request, which to our knowledge has not happened yet. And he's under contract through at least 2024. So the Blazers do not have any urgency to do this. If he wants out and they want to do right by him, then of course the trade can happen anytime. But this isn't Anthony Davis demanding out with 1 year left and the clock ticking and he could just walk away. Or even Kyrie Irving with 2 years left in his situation. This is three seasons left on his deal. So if he wants out, it's probably in the Blazers' best interest to do it anyway, because you can get a lot for him when you got 3 years left on his deal. The team that's trading for him knows they've got him locked up. No urgency, no worry about, like, you can get a boatload for Dame Lillard, or you should. So it could be in their best interest to just do it anyway, and also just to do right by him, to honor him with that courtesy if he truly doesn't want to be there anymore. But they don't have to.
Well, of course it's in the best interest of both sides to make a deal. If you're Portland, not the way this has kind of gone about, but this is kind of what you want, I think. Like, you want to have kind of permission from Damian Lillard to seek a deal. You're not going to win. Like, I don't think there's anything the Blazers can do because of the way their roster is made up over the next 3 years to put together a championship contender. So from that perspective, is it okay to just be like a first round and out playoff team just to get 82 games of Damian Lillard and a pretty fun regular season where you can argue about his place amongst all NBA teams that yell at writers like us for not putting him higher on the MVP ballot? Like, is that really worth it? Or do you get proactive and make a deal that sets you up for the long-term future? I'm with you. You can look around, and you do have to be careful if you're the Blazers. Like, you can't take on a, 28-year-old superstar with a year left on his deal. Like, and I'm basically saying that meaning Bradley Beal. Like, you can't take on a Bradley Beal, because Beal would be like, all right, here's my one season in Portland. Thanks for the memories. I'm going down to L.A. or wherever else I decide I want to go. So you've either got to do what Oklahoma City did and get a player, a centerpiece player like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who is a young player on a rookie deal who's going to sign a max-level deal when his time comes, or look for those stars that are under contract. And if you do that, there are two real places you can look right off the bat. One is Philadelphia, where Ben Simmons is under contract through 2025, and despite all the negativity around Ben Simmons, he is still a perennial all-star who, if he can ever get his shooting problems fixed, can be even better, can be an MVP candidate down the line. Or people get mad at me. I keep pointing to Boston all the time. You could look to the Celtics and say, look, Jaylen Brown is under a very manageable contract over the next few years. He is an all-star for the first time this year. He is a player that keeps getting better. Boston has most of its draft picks moving forward. They've got some somewhat appealing young players on that roster. You may even be able to throw in Marcus Smart in a deal like that and get a defensive-minded young player. 26, 27, Marcus Smart at this point, but a good defender on your roster. You know, those are the two teams right off the bat, Howard, that make the most sense for Damian Lillard. Plus, if you're Portland, you get him the hell out of your conference, so you don't have to deal with him, four times a year and maybe in the playoffs down the line.
Well, look, to the point you made earlier, he probably would want out of the conference too, because if part of the problem here is no matter what the Blazers do, you're not going to leapfrog Utah, Phoenix, and the two LA teams, and Denver, plus the teams coming up behind you. Memphis is fast improving. New Orleans could be on the rise depending on what they do. You probably want to be out of the conference at this point. And I'm not saying the East is some cakewalk, but there's only, usually three teams at any given time in the East that you really fear or that are at that level. The West is just ridiculous. But I also say this, like, things change quickly. You know, it's foolish for us ever to start predicting when the sunset comes for LeBron James and that era for the Lakers. But I mean, come on, they did get knocked out in the first round because LeBron and Anthony Davis couldn't stay healthy. There's no guarantee the Lakers have a long runway still as a contender in the West. Kawhi Leonard could walk away from the Clippers and suddenly they're out of the picture. The Nuggets, we got to see what happens when they're actually fully healthy again. But yeah, they should be around. The Jazz might lose Mike Conley. I'm not sure how high the ceiling is on that team as currently constructed. The Suns have Chris Paul at 36, and they're a contender and might even win a championship. But how many more years do they have there? So I think you also got to take the long view, whether you're the Blazers ownership and front office or whether you're even Damian Lillard. Like, take the – not the long, long view. He's 31 soon. But look at the top of the West. And as brutal as it looks, like, stuff changes quickly in the NBA. And I just pointed out, all those teams have some volatility where they could go from contender to just middle of the pack again almost overnight. So it's,
yeah,
not,
it's,
as,
not, Howard,
it's not that bleak.
It's not, to me, it's not just, you know, stay or whatever conference he might be going to. The two teams I pointed out, like, you add Damian Lillard to the other star that's there,
yes,
you've got a contender.
No,
like,
Lillard and
Embiid?
For sure.
Dude, come on. Like, that is...
Yes.
Like, I'll cede some respect to Brooklyn because Kevin Durant is still Kevin Durant and Kyrie and Harden. That team's got great firepower. But Lillard and Embiid, oh, that's dangerous.
Would be
Lillard
awesome.
Lillard and Tatum, that team's going to score a lot. Like, that's for sure. So
yeah.
I think if he goes to either one of those teams, he will put himself in position to win at
for
the
sure.
level he wants to win it. Like, I'm getting tired of, like, these trade machines floating through my Twitter timeline of, like, you could make Kristaps Porzingis plus two first-rounders for this. People in L.A. who are trying to do a deal that doesn't involve Anthony Davis are wild. Like, there's some wacky, you know, Portland would never take this type of stuff going on there. I think in the Eastern Conference, there you get return if you're Portland in the form of a marquee player, return
yes.
if Listen. You're Portland in the form of draft capital, and for Damian Lillard, you get your chance to win. And to your point earlier, Howard, I like it can't be that long a view. Lillard had some injury issues this year. He was nicked up. He still finished strong, and he still looks like the all-NBA player that is at the peak of his powers. But that could change next year. And if he gets hurt, and all of a sudden people start looking at that contract, which is like 50-plus million on the back end of that deal, that's going to diminish the return that you get. Right now, for the Portland Trailblazers, this may be their best chance to get maximum value back for Damian Lillard.
And that's a fair point. That's another way of taking the long view, right? The long view might mean, if we don't think we can ever get there with Lillard, as valuable as he is to this franchise, as popular as he is, as important as he's been to defining this franchise, yes, maybe the long view is flip him now at the height of his value, get as much back as possible because you are in a smaller market, you are in a market where you're probably not drawing free agents, and you can set yourself up for the next 5 to 10 years if you get the right kind of players and draft capital back. Totally get that. I do think it's a really tough thing, though. It's like sometimes you have to consider the other part of it, the just keeping faith with your fan base and the popularity of a player, selling tickets, all those things matter too. But you're right. And I like, you know, both of those are totally fair starting points for a trade discussion. Jaylen Brown or Ben Simmons. And if you're the Blazers, you know, I don't want it just a bunch of draft capital back. That would be great, you know, fine. But that could go any number of directions. Ben Simmons is still young, already, you know, in any given season, top 15 to top 20 in this league. Yes, he's got his flaws. It doesn't mean he's suddenly worthless because he wouldn't shoot in the fourth quarter in this past playoff series for the Sixers. Ben Simmons is a guy you can build around, and that's what you want. If you can get him or Jaylen Brown, plus whatever else you can extract from those teams, you're in pretty good shape. And if those guys are on the table, we know Ben Simmons almost certainly is. Jaylen Brown, more of a question. If those guys are on the table, that's probably as strong of a starting point for any discussion as you're going to get around the league.
You know what I wonder? Chauncey Billups gets introduced formally on Tuesday. What do you think Chauncey thought he was signing up for with this team? Do you think he thought he was signing up for, you know, a contending team with Lillard, McCollum, or whatever else they add to that mix, or like the Process West, which is what the Blazers would become if they decide to gut the backcourt?
I mean, I assume Chauncey Billups thought he was signing up to coach Damian Lillard, and you know, whether CJ McCollum or others are part of that, who knows? But I think he was probably figuring he's signing up to coach one of the best guards in the NBA, one of the best players in the NBA. But we should address this, you know, at least briefly here without getting into the sort of details. But, you know, the reason presumably that that Damian Lillard is now having concerns about the Blazers and all this, he got some backlash in recent days from Blazer fans who believe that he had something to do with or a lot to do with Billups being hired. And there have been reports surfaced again recently from 1997, Billups, I think, rookie season, about some really ugly and alarming sexual assault allegations. I shouldn't even say charges, because there were, you know, nothing came of this legally. I don't know what to make of it personally, Chris. I will tell you, I've been covering this league since 1997. That was the same year I started covering the Lakers. It's a pre-internet era. I mean, the internet is around. We have email and there's some websites, but it's not the internet as we know it now. There's no 24/7 debate shows on ESPN. There's no Twitter. There's no social media. There's no blogs. I have zero recollection of this story. And I was totally blindsided. Like, the other day when I saw this, I'm like, wait, what allegations about Chauncey? From when? 1997? Like, I have no recollection of this. I don't think it was that extensively covered. And if it was, maybe it was just a Boston story. And back then, not every story was a national story. It was a different time, both technologically and socially. So, you know, if fans in Portland are seeing these allegations for the first time and thinking that they don't want Chauncey Billups there, and they think that Dame has something to do with it, and so now they're attacking Damian Lillard on social media, he went back at some of them. So there's a whole other element here that was not part of this scene a few weeks ago when we first were talking about what are they going to do with the roster, who are they hiring as coach. So it's gotten murkier on a number of levels. I don't know what to make of all of that, to be honest.
I mean, to be perfectly honest, the Chauncey Billups incident in Boston in 1997, I was working for the team back then. I was a ball boy, still a teenager at that point. I don't remember it. Like, I this has come up just now in the last few weeks as Billups' name has been in circulation for a head coaching job. Maybe it's the sign of the times, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but when Billups was mentioned as a candidate to be the GM in Cleveland, I didn't hear a lot about this. When no. Billups went to ESPN, I didn't hear a lot about this.
No, not a lot.
You're right.
Zero.
You're right. I'm hedging my bet a little bit in case somebody points out, you know, here's a
I don't think it was covered, Chris.
Well, I don't either. And same thing with the Clippers when he was hired as an assistant coach. It absolutely is relevant. And, you know, when Chauncey is introduced as the head coach of the Blazers on Tuesday, he should be asked about it. Like, and he should be prepared to be asked about it. And he should have to have the same answer that he, you know, reportedly gave to Neil Olshey and to Jody Allen, the owner of the Blazers, when he does that. If he decides to say, look, I'm not going to talk about that, that's probably not going to work. That never does work in situations like this. But it's come up. It's one of those stories that it wherever it kind of was unearthed, it wasn't part of the Chauncey Billups story over the last few years, as he has been mentioned for other jobs.
No, and that's what's kind of strange about it to me too. Like, I haven't gone back to see, like, all right, where and how did this finally come to the surface again? And I'm not saying it shouldn't have. I'm just saying I'm a little confused because of what you just went through. He's had all these high profile jobs over the years, and it's and he's been traded multiple times over the years. I mean, I was
Correct.
covering the Knicks when he was traded to New York from the Nuggets. I don't recall this being part of the, you know, the cut and paste bio that you put in, you know, Chauncey Billups, who played here, finals MVP. And oh, by the way, there was this thing. Like, it didn't come up in New York. It didn't come up when he was, you know, then signed by the Clippers later. It didn't come up, as you noted, when he worked for ESPN, when he worked as a Clipper broadcaster. Like, after all these years, for this suddenly to be, you know, something that could make or break their hiring of him, make or break the Blazers' reputation with their fans. Again, I'm not judging whether people should have certain concerns or not, but it is strange from a news standpoint that 3 weeks ago this was not out in the ether at all, and suddenly this is something that could make or break the Blazers and their relationship with Lillard because fans are taking it out on him. It's really, you know, it's wild.
Just to clarify, Howard, exactly what it is we're talking about with Chauncey Billups. It was back in 2000 that Billups and former Celtics teammate Ron Mercer reached a financial settlement with a woman who alleged she was raped in 97 at the home of Antoine Walker, who is was another Celtics player at that time. In 97, Billups was a 21-year-old rookie. He was never charged with a crime as it related to that incident. It was just a financial settlement out of court that happened in 2000. Just that doesn't change whether it happened or it didn't or anything like that, but just to clarify exactly what it is we're talking about. To bring it back to Damian Lillard, I certainly hope that Lillard isn't, you know, being influenced or overly offended by stuff people say on social media, because like a lot of these people just come out of the woodwork I mean, there's, you know, social media is just such a hellhole that, like, you know, it doesn't represent the fan base at large. Like, I don't think the fan base at large blames Damian Lillard for what happened with the Blazers hiring Chauncey Billups. I don't believe that. Yes, Lillard has suggested he would like to play for Billups. That was in a story by The Athletic, but I don't think that he deserves blame for that whatsoever. And it goes back to my original point. Like, it just seems like Lillard's trying to find a way out of town. Like, he's trying to, like, you know, rationalize leaving this team, whether it's because of the roster, the coaching search, backlash from the fans. It's just like he's trying to find... It's like, no, you break up with me, so I don't have to break up with you. It's kind of like one of those things that seems to be materializing in a weird way.
Yeah, it's like what I said before. It seemed like if it's about this latest backlash about the Billups hiring, then that feels like... And if he's now saying it's about the roster, though, that feels like it's pretense, right? Like, it's really that he was looking for something. He didn't necessarily want to blame it on the team, because then it looks like you're throwing your teammates under the bus or whatever else. So maybe this controversy over Billups gave him the pretense that he needed to make the case that he was going to make anyway. I don't know. It's all a little strange, because like I say, a couple weeks ago, there was no sense that he was agitating to get out or was worried. And suddenly now he is. So, who knows? If Lillard's on the table, we're going to have a much more explosive offseason than we anticipated.
It could be a wild offseason regardless. Lillard, Ben Simmons, Bradley Beal. I mean, you could see some substantial player movement in the NBA over the next couple of months. All right, let's move on and let's talk about the Celtics, who introduced their new head coach, the 18th head coach in franchise history, Ime Udoka, formerly of the Brooklyn Nets, formerly of the Philadelphia 76ers, formerly of the San Antonio Spurs. And I got to tell you, Howard, watching that introductory press conference, I can see why Brad Stevens gravitated towards Ime Udoka. Because in a way, Udoka is everything that Brad Stevens isn't, but in some ways are things that he is. Let me explain that. Like, Brad Stevens came to the Celtics as this 30-something wunderkind who was a college coach at Butler. Udoka came a different path. He played in the NBA for many years. He rose the ranks the hard way on Greg Popovich's staff for several seasons, going to Philadelphia, working with Brett Brown during the process, going to Brooklyn to be on Steve Nash's staff. He has paid his dues over the years, and he represents kind of something that Brad, the type of person, coach, you know, an ex-player that Brad really isn't. At the same time, you can tell Udoka's got that Brad Stevens temperament. Like, he's a very calm, very specific, very disciplined type of guy. He says he's going to be a hard-nosed type of coach, but doesn't seem like the rah-rah type that is sort of the mold that Brad Stevens is cut from. I don't know if that means it'll be successful, but I can see right away exactly why Brad Stevens, in his first hire as president of basketball operations, would gravitate towards Ime Udoka.
Well, the resume, the pedigree is great, because obviously his first head or his first assistant coaching stint was with the Spurs under Greg Popovich. Like, a lot of guys have come off that tree. You know, Mike Budenholzer obviously is on the verge of getting to the finals with the Bucks and had a really nice run in Atlanta. Brett Brown, people could say what they want, but I thought Brett Brown, by and large, with a really difficult situation, did well in Philly. Not everybody who's come off the Popovich tree has thrived. Jacques Vaughn may be getting another shot sometime soon. He's been tied to the New Orleans job. But he started off with the Spurs before his stint with Orlando, which, again, another one of those tough jobs where nobody was going to succeed. Ime Udoka, I first met, he was like a virtual, I don't know if he was technically a rookie or just virtually a rookie. He was in Laker training camp in like 2003, my last year covering the Lakers. And he's one of these guys who, he was with the Lakers maybe, I don't know, his camp was like a month back then, right? So maybe I got to know him over 3 or 4 weeks or something before he got cut. Maybe it was a little longer. He wasn't there very long, but he was one of those guys you get a quick impression of. Really bright, good dude. You would just immediately get a sense, and you know how it is, like guys come through who are fringe players in terms of their talent, but you can tell how they managed to stick it out. And he had many years after that in his career as an end of bench guy in the league because great locker room guy, smart, good teammate, works hard, great guy to have at practice, all those other things. And those are the guys who often make for the best coaches in this league. They've had to get by, or not get by, they've had to build their career off of their smarts, off of their intellect and their understanding of the game, because they didn't have all the athletic gifts that some of their teammates had. And so I first met him in 03, met him again a year or two later. He ended up with a cup of coffee with the Knicks when I was covering the Knicks. But that he ended up becoming a coach didn't surprise me at all. He just kind of projected that kind of presence and personality. So it's great to see. I'm glad to see him get this opportunity in Boston. I will do the caveat that I always do with these guys, right? By these guys, I mean longtime assistants who we get to know a little bit, and they seem really sharp, check all the boxes, right? Great communicator, knows the game really well, seems like he'd be a great leader, and you never know if it's going to work or not. You never know until the assistant coach actually becomes a head coach and gets their first opportunity. But I think Ime Udoka has all of the qualities that you'd be looking for. This is a great opportunity. A young team that's at a critical moment. They got to figure out, you know, where they're going next. Brad Stevens has some work to do on that roster. But I love the hire. I can't wait to see what he does with it.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that Brad Stevens, in addition to the many people that have employed Ime Udoka that he talked to, received ringing endorsements about Udoka from the three guys on the team right now, whether it's Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, three guys that played for Udoka in a way for USA Basketball back in 2019. And Udoka mentioned this at his press conference, that in that, you know, few weeks span, he really forged a pretty good bond with those Celtics players. So that, I think, will enable him to hit the ground running. I think he's going to be an excellent defensive coach. That's been his MO throughout his time as an assistant coach, being a sharp defensive mind. If I have any questions, it's, you know, what kind of offensive play caller is he? What kind of offensive system does he put into place? He's got some firepower there, specifically with Tatum and to a lesser degree, Jaylen Brown. He is going to have some weapons to work with. And I thought one of the strengths of Brad Stevens was that his offensive philosophy was really good. He was able to maximize the talents of Tatum and Brown and out of timeout play calling. That is oftentimes where coaches separate themselves. I thought Brad Stevens was one of the best during his time with the Celtics. I don't know what Ime Udoka is going to look like. But of all the available coaches that were out there, Howard, Udoka would have been my first choice. I think these assistant coaches, they deserve opportunities. If they have paid their dues, worked for good teams, get high recommendations from these coaches, why not? Like, there's only so many times you want to go to the well and recycle former head coaches. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Like, Mike D'Antoni certainly deserves another job at some point. But I love it that Ime Udoka gets his first job with Boston in a position to win. Like, the Celtics should be a top five team in the Eastern Conference next year if they make the right moves on the fringes with this roster. So Udoka is going to get a chance not just to be a head coach, but to be a head coach on a winning team.
Yeah, which is also like a rare thing, right? Like, guys who are getting their first chance to be a head coach, it so often is the case where you're going to a losing situation and it's like, well, it's one of 30. There are only 30 of these jobs. You take the job you can get. And you end up with, you know, a bad Orlando team or, you know, at times.
You end up as Steven Silas. You end up basically as Steven Silas.
Yeah. Or, you know, BJ Bickerstaff, you know, I think is in that situation. I mean, a lot of guys have had to start with, you know, I don't want to say unwinnable, but you're fighting an uphill battle, and then that becomes your record. And then it's, well, okay, now we're not sure. There's a reason it's taken a while for Jacques Vaughn to get another chance, because Orlando didn't go so well. I mean, heck, that was the reason that Frank Vogel, for a while, didn't get another shot after, you know, oh, he looked great in Indiana. Well, maybe he's not so great. He looked terrible in Orlando. Well, roster has a lot to do with both things, and yep. He finally did get another shot, and now he's a championship-winning coach, and no one will ever doubt Frank Vogel again, presumably. So, you know, it's all contextual. I'm glad to see that guys are getting good jobs, right? And if Dame Lillard stays, Chauncey Billups, for his first head coaching opportunity, will have gotten a good job. Championship? Maybe not. But are the Blazers going to be a great team, very competitive year in, year out, as long as Lillard's there and Chauncey gets to benefit from that? Then yes. Quick side note, and I alluded to this in my morning shoot-around column on Monday, just about where things stand with NBA hiring and GMs and coaches, and focused a little bit on the Mavericks, but they're now, as of this taping, 10 black head coaches in the NBA. There are still some things that can happen, right? Nate McMillan does not have a permanent contract yet with Atlanta. Guys could be fired.
If that doesn't happen, well,
it'd be insane, right? But still, I'm just noting for the record. Assuming Nate McMillan is extended as he should be, and as we all would expect, assuming nobody else gets fired among those 10, there will be at least 10 on opening night of 2021-22. And there's still 3 vacancies left in New Orleans, Washington, and Orlando, which means it could even climb even higher. I pointed out, Chris, because the NBA has been lagging on hiring black head coaches for years now. They hit an all-time high of 14 back in, I think it was 2012-13. The next year it dipped to 12, and then it's been in single digits ever since. As low as 6, sometimes in the 7-8 range. It's usually averaging around 7. So there are 10 right now, could even go up still. And important to note for a couple reasons. One, finally reversing the trend and starting to climb again. Two, in the bubble last year, of course, after there was the Wildcat strike and the players and the league came together to discuss any number of issues regarding race, both within and outside of the league, one of the things as far as league policies or league issues was, listen, we need to see more effort to elevate black GMs and black head coaches in this league. And they'd been lagging in both places. They're doing pretty well in both places right now. Nico Harrison, of course, reportedly going to be the GM in Dallas. And that will mean there are 6 black head of basketball operations at the team level, right? And I'm not counting guys like Elton Brand is number 2 in Philly to Daryl Morey, right? Trajan Lang is number 2. So some GMs are almost like, they're more like the number 2 because some teams go team president and then GM. But there are 6 heads of basketball operations right now in this league that are African-American. That also is one of the higher numbers that we've had in the last 15 years. So there seems to be some steady progress on both fronts. And I just think we should point it out because it's been a while since we could say that.
Yeah, and we can maybe see Fred Vinson get the job in New Orleans. I know he's a candidate for that. Jamal Mosley, now that he's not going to get the Mavericks job, Orlando, I know, is interested in talking to him. So that number, like you said, could grow. Let's touch on quickly before we go, 2 of the teams that had a little upheaval. You mentioned the Mavericks. Let's start there. You wrote a little bit about them, as you said. What do we make of Dallas kind of revamping the Donnie Nelson, Rick Carlisle franchise in the Nico Harrison and Jason Kidd mold now? I mean, I think a lot of people, most people, I would say, had no idea who Nico Harrison was before this past week. A longtime Nike executive, has a great relationship with players, many players across the league. He gets his first chance to be a top basketball executive. He has been pursued, Howard, in the past by other teams for basketball operations roles. He has declined them each time. What do you think of Nico Harrison as the top basketball exec in Dallas and Jason Kidd, the former Maverick, now the head coach?
Yeah, I mean, in the case of Nico Harrison, so, you know, he played Division I ball. You know, I think nothing really of note in his basketball playing career, but he's been, you know, with Nike for a long time, and he's been in NBA circles for a very long time. Universally liked and respected. He is a consummate networker, and he's coming from the marketing side, right? He played basketball at a certain level many years ago in the 90s. So it's an interesting move because he has no track record as an assistant GM. And if I were an assistant GM in this league, I'd be looking a little sideways at the Mavericks saying, wait, hold on. Like I've been busting my butt in the front office for however many number of years with this franchise or that. Like,
how about if you're Michael Finley? Did you look sideways there?
He's already working for the Mavericks. Yeah. So here's the thing. I salute teams for being unconventional, thinking outside of the box. That's fine. I think it's fully possible that Nico Harrison will be a great GM for the Mavericks. But the problem is being the GM of a team, and this is where I really like just where Mark Cuban loses me with a hire like this. It could work out. Nico Harrison could be great at this, and he might hire a bang-up staff that will fill in all of the places where he doesn't have expertise. But the bottom line is, his talent scouting was for purposes of marketing and shoe deals, not for purposes of putting together a championship roster. You need to know the salary cap. You need to know the CBA. You need to know sports science and analytics and all these other things. And you have to hire people, and you have to build out an organization. The GM job, or team president, depending on the team, is a bunch of other stuff, and he might be good at all of it. I said the same things about Leon Rose when the Knicks hired him away from CAA, and it's a similar kind of thing, right? The guys who came from agencies like Leon Rose or Bob Myers or Neil O'Shea, Nico Harrison, it's kind of the same thing. You're going for somebody who is the consummate networker and marketing guy, business type guy, who works on that side of basketball, but who knows everybody and has a massive Rolodex. And you're saying that's who I want to run basketball ops. That's fine. You have to recognize that there's a bunch of stuff that the GM job entails that has nothing to do with networking. That has nothing to do with who you know. And just being a good guy or a guy that everybody gravitates to, whether as an agent or as a shoe rep, doesn't mean you're going to be able to sign them. Like, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving didn't join the Nets because Sean Marks was some great consummate networker. He's Sean Marks. He's a former NBA player who like had a nice career as like the 15th man, maybe 13th man. Sean Marks, they joined the Nets because they were in Brooklyn and because the Nets had done a really nice job of building up a foundation. Lawrence Frank hasn't blown anybody. Lawrence Frank's a really fun guy to talk to, but I don't think Lawrence Frank, like, it's not like Pat Riley walking into a room. And I'm not even sure that Pat Riley walking into the room is the reason that LeBron and Bosch went there. It's because Wade was already there and Miami's a really nice place to live. So we put too much emphasis, or not we, I think some team owners put too much emphasis on the idea that the GM is your recruiter in chief. It doesn't matter how charismatic, how charming, how convincing, how persuasive they are. The stars are coming if you can show them a chance or a path to the championship, maybe good weather, maybe marketing, if you're New York or LA, lifestyle, maybe the coach, maybe the teammates, like those things all matter. But who the GM is doesn't matter. The idea that hiring Nico Harrison, along with Jason Kidd, who again, players really respect Jason Kidd. Okay, that's fine. What they really want to know, what stars are really going to want to know is, how are you getting me to the finals? How are you going to give me the opportunity to win championships? That's it. So it's an interesting play. I'm not sure where it ends up.
Yeah, I found it interesting too. Your comments on Nico, I agree with. It's a tough job, and it involves knowing things that, you know, I think Nico Harrison would acknowledge he doesn't know yet, and still has, and there'll be a lot of learning on the job, at least early on. I'm more interested or intrigued by the kid hire. Carlisle giving him his stamp of approval before he was even hired was interesting, I guess.
Weird
for sure. And I get it. You know, Jason Kidd was a player, I wouldn't say in the mold of Luka Doncic, because Jason could never shoot like that, especially early on in his career. But, you know, a big guard that could do a lot of things. There's a connectivity there. But Jamal Mosley's a really good coach. Like, he's a really good coach. He has been a candidate for coaching jobs before. If all the reporting is accurate, and I have no reason to believe otherwise, he has a strong relationship with Luka Doncic. I just worry, if you're Dallas, you're overthinking things a little bit. Like, you know, Michael Finley was there. You know, they clearly like Michael Finley. The plan is for him to stay. Why not make him your VP of basketball operations? Jamal Mosley was there. Why not elevate Jamal Mosley? Is it because they're not the sexiest names? Like, they're not going to win the press conference with that? I mean, the Mavericks have won the press conference here. Like, you know, there's going to be a lot of intrigue around Nico for months now. Jason Kidd, obviously, strong ties to Dallas, was a big part of that championship team in 2011. I worried that the Mavericks had something there that could have worked and just did something different for the sake of doing something different. That's my biggest concern with Dallas and some of the moves they made.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think it's two things. I think it's wanting to be unconventional for the sake of being a conventional on some level, as you kind of said. But also, look, Mark Cuban did what owners in this league always do, to hire the guys they know. Like, it's not nepotism, because that's too strong of a word for it. It's not hiring family. But Mark Cuban knows and likes Jason Kidd. He knows and likes Nico Harrison. He hired the guys he knows instead of doing a real search that tries to find some hidden gem or candidates who you're not familiar with, who might bring a different perspective and a different approach. And instead, you hire the people you knew. And I made this remark, or I noted this in the column that I wrote Monday on SI.com about this. Jeannie Buss hired Magic Johnson for similar reasons. She knew and liked Magic Johnson, and they'd known each other since they were, you know, since she was like 19 and Magic Johnson was a rookie. And so there was a comfort there. And I get that. I understand that. You own a team. You want to hire somebody to run basketball ops that you have a rapport with, that you trust. And Jeannie had that with Magic Johnson. It did not work out that well. Vivek Ranadive hired Vlade Divac because he gotten to know him, while Vlade was more of just kind of a roving ambassador for the Kings, community relations type role. And he made him president or GM, whatever his title was. Didn't work out so well. Don't hire people just because you know them and like them, and they, you know, in some cases used to play basketball for your team. That's what it feels like with Mark Cuban hiring Jason Kidd. Granted, Kidd has some other coaching stints. Checkered record, to say the least. And in Nico Harrison's case, like, yeah, it's somebody he knew and had done, you know, whether it's, I don't want to say done business with, but had, you know, that kind of business relationship with. I mean, it to me, it smacks of all the same things that team owners often do that leads them, you know, down the wrong path. Like, do a real search. Find somebody who truly can do the job on day one. And again, Nico Harrison might do a great job for all I know. I don't think that's the first place you go when you're looking for somebody to take over basketball operations when the guy has never done it at any level.
All right, let's finish in Utah with the Jazz, where Dennis Lindsay is out as the team's president of basketball operations. Lindsay will stay with the Jazz in an advisory role to new owner Ryan Smith. Justin Zanuck is going to continue to run the day-to-day operations as the team GM. Howard, I wasn't surprised that Dennis Lindsay left his post as president of basketball ops. That's something that's been in the water supply for some time now. I also don't expect Dennis Lindsay, who is just 52 years old, to be an advisor to Ryan Smith for all that long. I would expect, you know, probably not this coming season, but within a year or so, to see Dennis Lindsay reemerge as a top basketball exec with another team. He is obviously a Texas guy. He came out of the San Antonio system, was born in Texas, played at Baylor. So if an opportunity, I think, emerges in Texas, don't be surprised to see Dennis Lindsay jump on it. But what was your reaction to Dennis Lindsay being out, Justin Zanuck in? And I'll ask you this. I don't think this is the end of changes in Utah. I've been saying and writing for some time now that Danny Ainge is going to be in the mix out there. He has a very strong relationship with Ryan Smith. I would not be surprised in the next few months to see Ainge emerge as some kind of advisor as well.
So there's the Danny Ainge element hovering. There's the Dwayne Wade element as well. You know, Wade moves into Utah as a minority owner over the course of this last season, and is seemingly taking on a visible role. You know, clearly, literally visible, sitting courtside during playoff games, talking to Donovan Mitchell, clearly wants to be an active part of the organization. So Dwayne Wade might have people he has, you know, connections to, might want to introduce them into the mix here. And you've got a new owner anyway. And so this whole new ownership group might want to put its own stamp on things. I've heard Shane Battier's name floated as a possibility. And so it's interesting. But on the Dennis Lindsay part of it, I know that he has told folks within the last year or so that actually he, and I know it sounds like a cliche to spend more time with family, but he's, you know, been grinding at this for a long time. The front office job is all consuming. And he did telegraph to some people within the last couple of years that he might want to slow down at some point soon and spend more time with family. And if that's truly the case, then I don't think we'll see him resurface with one of the Texas teams, as you were alluding to. And so maybe there's nothing sinister going on behind the scenes or other machinations about elevating somebody, bringing in somebody. Maybe it's not about Danny Ainge. Maybe it's just Dennis Lindsay had a different thought about where he wants to do with this, you know, stage of his life.
No. I mean, like, I think he was done with Utah. I think that experience was over. Like, it was a good run. What was it? 10 plus years with the Jazz. He's leaving them in a very good position roster wise.
Yes. He's done a phenomenal job.
Phenomenal job. He's leaving them in a good position with Justin Zanuck, who has been running the day-to-day since 2019 when he came back to work with them. He was with that team, what, for 5 years before going to work in the Milwaukee organization. So, you know, fundamentally, he's not leaving Utah in a bad place. I fool me once, let's spend more time with family, Daryl Morey. You're not gonna fool me again. These guys are addicts.
That was Stan Van Gundy too. With one of those, was it the Miami one or Orlando? One of those
family,
where he left.
Your family doesn't want you around that much. Stop. They don't. Like, you know, I think Dennis Lindsay, like, I don't think he'll be anywhere in a year. Like, I think he'll sit the year out. But after a year, what the hell these guys gonna do? He's in his early 50s. Like, you're not even at retirement age yet. Like, even Danny Ainge, I can understand Danny Ainge being like, I want to slow down. You had 18 years in Boston. You're in your 60s. Like, I get some of that. You had two heart attacks. Like, I get that. But Dennis Lindsay, I don't. Like, Dennis Lindsay is going to be coveted because of the run he had in Utah, drafting Donovan Mitchell, drafting Rudy Gobert, building that team first from the Gordon Hayward level to the level they're at right now. He is going to be able to have his pick of jobs in the coming years. And I don't know, like, you know, Houston currently has a top executive. That ever opened up, I'm sure Dennis Lindsay would jump at that opportunity. Who knows what's happening in San Antonio right now with their front office, Popovich, whenever he decides to go. I just think you're going to see this time next year, when we record this same podcast, Howard, I have a feeling we're talking about Dennis Lindsay being back with another team.
Or we'll be talking about the quality time he's spending skiing with his kids. You don't know, like going to the beach. We could do an entire podcast about Dennis Lindsay, you know, hanging out and having a nice time with his life.
Does the pandemic not teach you anything about how much your wife and kids want to have you around? Like, does that not teach you anything? Like, seriously. Like, come on.
Fair point. One serious note before we leave the subject and leave the podcast. Justin Zanuck is another one who's come up through the agent ranks, right? Worked for Andy Miller's agency for years and who is getting his shot, which I'm glad to see. Justin really sharp, but I think is going to do a great job with the Jazz and has been part of that front office and that central brain trust for several years already anyway. But Zanuck did come up the route where when he left being an agent, he was an assistant, you know, with the Bucks. He was an assistant with the Jazz. He's been in the secondary or tertiary roles before rising to become the head of basketball ops. And, you know, that's more the model that I think is the better bet if you're a team. Like, okay, you think an agent could actually be really great running your team? You know, do what Bob Myers did and be an assistant GM for a year at the Warriors before assuming the full-time job, or what Neil Olshey did with the Clippers where he was, secondary or some other sub, you know. Well, he wasn't the GM on day one with the Clippers before he took over there and then eventually to the Blazers as well. So Zanuck has paid his dues, has worked hard. This is a great opportunity for him. And of course, he's got a great situation that he's taking over that he in part helped create.
Yep. I hope he gets licensed to run that team for the foreseeable future because he is the most qualified person now within that organization to be running basketball operations. All right, Howard, we'll be back on Friday. Who you got coming up this week, Howard?
We've got a comedian Jamel Johnson, who in addition to being a comedian, also has his own very cool new podcast. It's called NBA Storytime, in which they delve into some of the lesser known or quirkier stories of NBA history. It's a lot of fun. It's brand new. People go check that out. NBA Storytime with Jamel Johnson. He will be on the crossover with me on Friday.
All right. As always, subscribe, rate, review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you can download podcasts. Give us your feedback. Howard's on Twitter at Howard Beck. I am at SI Chris Mannix. Let us know what you want to see on this show moving forward. We'll be more than happy to incorporate new things as we move this pod forward. Howard, we'll see you next week, man. Looking forward to it.
Always a pleasure, my friend.